Testing season is right around the corner, and this is when confidence really matters. When kids take time to review key concepts and strengthen their skills before assessments, it can make all the difference. IXL helps reinforce what they're learning right now, so they walk into every test feeling prepared, capable, and confident. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts. Designed for students from pre-K through 12th grade, IXL delivers personalized, interactive practice that adapts to your child's level and pace. It's an easy, effective way to support learning as the school year heads into its final stretch. Studies show kids who use IXL score higher on tests, proven in all 50 states. IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now, and listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLLearning.com/audio. Visit IXLLearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Nerds! Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Personal finance can feel like a pop quiz you didn't study for. This podcast is your study guide. On NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast, you'll hear from trusted journalists who explain the why behind major financial decisions. You'll get research-backed insights and clear pros and cons, whether you're planning a big purchase or just want to grow your wealth. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
Hi, my name is Lloyd Lockridge, and I'm the host of a new podcast from Odyssey called Family Lore. In this podcast, I'm going to have people on to tell unusual and sometimes far-fetched stories about their families.
I've heard my whole life that she invented the margarita.
And then we're going to investigate those stories and find out how much of it is true.
He gets a patent 1 month before the Wright brothers. Oh, my God.
Please follow and listen to Family Lore, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
Welcome to Synapse, Think Tank of the Air, featuring influencers, creatives, and thought leaders in the Twin Cities. And now, here is our host, Steve LeBall.
And welcome to Synapse, Think Tank of the Air. And boy, we have several big thinkers in here for you today. We talk about a variety of things. Depending on what comes up, left or right, we have Amalia Moreno-Damgaard. How are you doing, Amalia?
Hello, Steve.
And the middle child is Bob Hess, a painter and much, much more, I'm sure.
Oh, I don't know. Maybe that's about it.
Okay. And we know more, a lot more about Christina Helen Coulton because she's the executive director of Norway House.
Yeah.
And you're Norwegian.
Yes. Thanks for having me.
Okay. Well, let's start out, if you can give just a bit of a story about how you got where you are. Now, Amalia, I know you have a rather broad background, including being a banker. And now you're doing a variety of things, including being a chef, the Latin gourmet. So if you can tell me a little bit how you got from one to the other.
Wow. Long story, but the short version of that is...
Yeah, we want the short version.
After spending almost 20 years in international banking, business development, I decided to take a break from banking. Food and culture have always been my passion. I am born and raised in Latin America. It made sense to me that to pursue my purpose, to pursue my passion. So I started my business, Amalia Latin Gourmet, about 15 years ago. And this is what I've been doing for a while. I wrote a book. I'm on the second one, and I speak. I do a lot of demonstrations. I am a consultant for food companies, and I also founded Women Entrepreneurs of Minnesota in the process. It's a 501c6 nonprofit,
right,
fostering women entrepreneurship through leadership and mentoring.
Gosh, well, you're doing everything but banking now.
That's correct,
That's good.
It has been helpful to have that background because it's a very strong business background that is helpful no matter where you go.
Well, a lot of people even begin to define culture by looking at food. I know, let's see, some of the Norwegian food favorites, lefse.
Oh, yeah, lefse is a good one. And
Lutefisk?
Lutefisk, yeah.
Maybe.
All the L's. So, now, you're actually from Norway, which is opposed to a lot of the Minnesotans. They say I'm Norwegian, but actually they're born in the Midwest here. And it's always kind of funny because the Norwegians landed, what, about the 19th century?
Yes.
And so they kind of pick that as Norway, Norwegian culture.
Yeah.
And then all these people come over in like the 21st century. And is there any kind of a cultural gap between what they did 150 years ago and what they're doing now?
Well, I think we're certainly trying to showcase more of what Norway is today versus the Rosemaling and the Lutefisk and the Lefse that we had back then when they came from Norway.
Can you, are there Minnesotans that speak Norwegian?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Is it archaic or is it like modern?
It's an old version of Norwegian, but there's a lot of Norwegians that have moved here as well that are Norwegians like me that speak Norwegian.
Speak proper Norwegian.
Speak proper, yeah.
And speaking of Norwegian, Bob Hest, and I have not met you before, Bob, but I understand you're a painter.
Right.
How did you get it? And you also have a background in music.
I was lucky to do two things. I've worked in music for a long time. I managed a band for a while, and then I had a company where we wrote music for television commercials.
Boy, that's great. What band did you manage?
Oh, it was a band called The Wallets.
Well, that's famous. That's you're legendary.
Well, I don't know about that, but I'd moved to Minneapolis, and I saw The Wallets playing at a David Hockney show at the Walker, and I'd been in town for maybe 2 weeks, and I looked at these guys, and I said, I'm going to work with these fellas. And then I did.
You came, you saw, you conquered.
Well, I'd never seen anything quite like them. And they were quite wonderful musicians and pretty good guys. So,
where did you come here from?
Oh, I lived in Seattle for a while. I was just out there, doing a young guy's move away for a while. And I worked for an arts organization there and painted and painted houses and did all the things that one does.
The big nut, you're not talking murals, you're talking about...
I painted 7-Elevens, thank you very much. I had a big contract with it, worked out very well.
Well, that's good. I think the wages are higher for those kinds of jobs.
I can't remember.
Do you sell paintings?
I mean, I try to, and yes, I do. I sold two yesterday.
That's great.
Yeah.
Can I ask what price range you're in?
Are you? No.
We have some at Norway House right now.
Yes, we do.
Okay. Well, there's a good segue. Where can I see these paintings?
Well, at Norway House, there's a show right now. It'll be there until the end of October. And it's I have 15 new paintings. And then I've also, with the assistance of Navab Brothers here in Minneapolis, made rugs out of the designs of my paintings.
They turned your paintings into rug design.
Yeah. Like and that. Then we made patterns. We sent them to India. They're all hand knotted, woolen silk, and they're quite pretty.
Wow, that's beautiful. Interesting. One of the first guests we had on this show formed a company called Alice Riot, where they take artworks and make women's clothing out of them.
Oh, really?
Kelly Grayler. Launched that.
Huh, don't know about
I see
her.
That trend that has been developing for a few years. I have some friends that are painters, artists, and that are creating women's clothing, cushions for living rooms, pieces for the wall, and so on. So it seems to me that it's a natural extension of what you already do. It's great.
Yeah, I had nothing to do with it except that Farzan Navab asked me if I would, and I said, sure.
See, that's the kind of cooperation they need.
Yeah.
We were talking on the way in how it's just so much easier to say yes.
Well,
to most things.
That's true. Things proceed along more rapidly that way.
Yeah.
Saying no kind of bogs things down.
It really does. You end up doing it anyhow. Right?
Right. So now, are you... I've heard of... there was a famous singer in the 50s. I'm not sure what grade of heroin he was on, but he would see bubbles when he sang, and so he would try to reach the right note. He would see a certain colored bubble up here somewhere and then down.
Oh, that's interesting.
You have that kind of what I think it's called synesthesia, right? Where you
not
see colors.
I don't see no.
Sounds and,
I don't. No.
You don't paint music?
No, I don't paint music.
Oh man, I thought we could have a breakthrough here.
My job really was to say I like it or I don't like it. Stop or go.
Hey. Well, that's good, too.
Yeah, it worked out well.
I don't want to be one of the naysayers.
Oh, there's plenty of naysayers, but it's just often a yay-sayer.
Hmm. Well, in visual art, Amalia, isn't cooking half presentation? It's the way it looks, whether it looks good.
Absolutely. And there is a close connection with artists, all kinds of artists, even music, even any kind of art form, whether you're a sculptor or a painter. Part of the training that I have received in the past is through the Minneapolis Institute of Arts. I remember that when my son was in grade school, they had this program, and I don't know if they still do, but it was called Art Masterpiece. And I took it as an opportunity to learn more about art. I had received art, you know, through school, through college classes. And then when I went to Le Cordon Bleu and became a chef, I saw this as an opportunity to expand the way that I communicate my food to people. Because absolutely, you're right, food is very visual. But having the ability to explain it to people in an artistic way, it is indeed an art form. And when I look at a piece of art, it helps me describe food.
Boy, well, that's interesting. I mean, when you, I know that from being in working in magazines, food is also very difficult to photograph properly. So there's a secondary art on that. Do you paint bowls of fruit and things like that? Do you paint food? I mean, let's make a circle here.
Well, I think there's probably been some food in a painting, but I've never painted the bowl of anything.
Apples?
No, I don't think I have.
Okay,
no.
Well, we're going to do something kind of really great for an audio medium. Can you describe some of your paintings?
No, I'm just kidding. I have to, don't I?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've...
I'm not going to sell any if we can't, you know...
Well, there, here you go. I think there's... I painted a lot of paintings that have been very influenced by how I grew up. And I made a comment the other day to someone that I'm doing paintings that I did the drawings for when I was six. So... Wow. These are images of animals, of the places I grew up in, the places I used to tramp around with when I was a little boy. And so I've always done the same thing. I expand those things, but the basis of my work is how I grew up. It's what I know.
So you don't need to find your inner child. You just need to find your old child's drawings.
People tell me, quit being a child.
But that's the opposite of all the Zen masters say.
And we have some similarities here,
really?
Because a lot of what I do, my core, my purpose is centered in my childhood, in my growing up in Guatemala, cooking with my grandmother, cooking with my mother, who were excellent cooks. And what I do today is deeply connected to that. Whether I am speaking to a group or when I write articles, for example, and I have recipes connected to them, I oftentimes think back to the times when I was enjoying that particular dish with my grandmother or when I was helping her make that particular dish. And so for me, it's really, really easy to talk about food if I connect it to my background, to my childhood, to my upbringing in Guatemala.
Gosh, well then, we'll start with you then. Describe some of your food.
So, my core is Guatemalan, and from there I have expanded to Latin American cuisine. My core is deeply ingrained in everything I do.
We'll pick out one of your favorite dishes. And
so, I was just at the World of the Latino Cuisine, this is the second time I was there in New Jersey last week. And I presented what I call two star dishes from my home country. And one of them is called pollo con crema y loroco. And the other one is called arroz con chipilín. And the first one is a chicken dish with a flower bud and cream. And the second one is a rice with a leaf, very delicate aromatic leaf. Both of those are native to the Central American region, or I should say to the Mesoamerican region. So those are, you know, two star dishes that I made because they connect me to my childhood. They connect me specifically to my grandmother.
Well, I'm getting hungry here listening to your childhood. Well, Bob, you never did finish a description of a painting. We know it's from your childhood. So stick figures,
No.
You went beyond?
I was quite good as a child. I could really draw the figure.
A prodigy.
I know. I worked really hard. I've always liked to draw. And I always, when I was a little kid, there were a few boys that would sit on top of Terry Downer's garage and draw. And we would draw. The drawings had to be perfect. And we would copy comics.
Mm.
And Terry Downer was better than me.
High art.
Well, I suppose you could say it was, but we learned how to draw the figure. We just taught ourselves by drawing for hours and hours and hours on top of the garage. I don't think Terry Downer's mother knew we were on top of the garage, but we were.
We're out painting the garage.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. So we'll just pick one. I'm still waiting for a description of one work. I'm getting all the dreaming of it.
Oh, why don't you do
Daisy?
That?
How about the Daisy one?
Okay, well, we have an art critic here.
No, I think you should. No. Why don't you describe it? It might be easier for you.
They're all very fantastical, is what I would describe them, and whimsical, and just extremely colorful. And
But I'm saying, what color?
Oh, reds and blues and greens.
Now we're talking.
Yellow.
Very bright colors. No muted.
As a child would like. Nothing somber.
No, there's nothing somber in these paintings at all. Zero.
Wow.
They're very bright colors. But now I'm working on some new paintings right now that are all black and white. So
are you depressed?
As a matter of fact, thanks for mentioning it. No, not noticeably.
Well, you know, now that you're grown up.
Well, you said that. I'm not sure.
Okay, well, you're doing a job. Well, Christina... people probably confuse you with the college in Northfield, right? Because your last name is Carlton.
Yeah, that's my husband's name. So
okay,
it's,
so you have to. What's your maiden name?
Johansson.
Oh, well, see, that's
awesome. Yeah, it's very Norwegian. Yeah, my mother-in-law is actually from Guatemala.
Wonderful.
Yes.
Have to talk.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. All these connections. Now, I was amazed. I mean, I should say, first of all, we're kind of collaborating or partnering with Norway House. We have an event coming up there this Wednesday.
Yeah, on the 3rd.
Major event. We just confirmed that Mayor Fry will be there.
Oh, nice.
To welcome everybody. So we're going to envision. Maybe you can be there, Bob. Envision what, if they had an innovation festival in the Twin Cities, what would it look like and how would you get involved? So that's kind of a half-day conference on that.
I don't have to answer that, do I? I can think about it?
We can make it up.
Okay.
I'm going to put that on the top of my agenda.
No, so it's going to be in the 3rd. I'll be there.
Yeah.
Okay.
You should be there.
Good.
I'll be there.
Yeah.
It's done.
Mark that down.
Yeah.
Don't have to. She'll remind me.
1 to 6.
I'll get a call. But are you going to come?
So I plan to be there. I'll be driving the mayor over.
Mm-hmm.
And, Christina, you get to see a lot of different things in the Norway House. I mean, I hadn't heard of it before last year or earlier this year. And it's an amazing little building right on East Franklin. And you walk in, and there's a beautiful hall that's actually an art gallery filled with paintings by this Bob Hest fellow. But what else do you get to do that you enjoy at Norway House?
I tell people that no day is the same. Every day is different. And that's what makes this job so much fun. And I get to represent Norway, which is my home country, and something that I've done since I was a little girl. We moved around with my father, who was a Norwegian diplomat.
Mm.
And in each country we were in, we always represented Norway. So I'm still doing it to today and here in Minnesota, and that's what makes this job so special for me. But Norway House, we've been in that location for only 3 years. So it's quite new. We've been a nonprofit since 2004 and have programs and events. But it's until, we had that building, the big blue building on Franklin Avenue, we really flourished and people...
Bob, did you help paint their building?
No, but I would have painted it exactly that color.
Yeah.
It would have. I would have.
Sure.
It's a wonderful organization and a wonderful staff.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen...
Fun staff to work with.
Yes. The staff is stunning. A bunch of really smart people doing good work.
Well, thank you, Bob.
The variety of
it's true.
I was invited there last May for a Finnish May Day celebration. which, yeah, lo and behold, 23andMe told me I'm part Finnish, so I was compelled to go. Mm-hmm. I was finding my roots.
Yeah.
And so what they do, they're silly, aren't they, those Finns?
Well, I have to be careful on the air.
Well, they're silly in a good way.
Yes, silly in a good way. But no, it's we have events from all types of organizations that host programs and panel discussions, and I mean it's all over the. We have cookbooks and book signings.
Good
and
to know.
Yeah, absolutely. So
are
it's
you open to all kinds of groups?
Yes.
They don't have to be Norwegian?
No, not at all.
Like I say, I'm more.
We have German events and yeah.
And you're by marriage, you're Danish, right?
Yes.
So that's Scandinavian.
Yep, that's close enough.
And the great thing about Norwegians, according to our president, is that that's where we want all of our immigrants to come from, right? It was singled out as the ideal source for foreign people to invade our shores.
Yeah.
I don't think the Swedes would agree, but go ahead.
Well, my Swedish ancestors would say, watch out for those Norwegians now. So, anyway.
Well, I think most families but lots of Scandinavian families are both Norwegians and Swedish.
Oh, mixed and, marriages.
Oh, absolutely. And if my family was a typical, there's a constant kind of humorous bickering that goes on between who's best.
Okay, we're going to continue that bickering in a moment. Maybe we'll even argue about it off the air.
All right.
We'll be right back to Synapse Think Tank of the Air right after this.
Synapse, Think Tank of the Air. We'll be back in a moment.
And we're back. I'm Steve LeBeau, host of Synapse Think Tank of the Air. And we have three delightful guests today. We have Amalia Moreno Damgaard, which Damgaard, that's the Danish part.
That is right.
And we have Bob Hest, you're from Fargo? Mentioned that before?
Well, no.
The greater Fargo area?
Yes, I'm from Holly, Minnesota.
Oh, Holly. Okay, so you are a Minnesotan.
Well, yes, but my family is from from both sides of the river, so.
Okay.
I'm kind of Dakota guy, too.
Both sides of the river. And then across the big stream from Norway, we have Christina Helen Carlton, the executive director of the Norway House. And we were talking earlier, even before the program, about how culture, I remember when I was a kid, culture was not something that you saw in an opera house. And I think the turning point, you're roughly my age, Bob, that when the movie's roots came, all of a sudden people tried to do their genealogies and find out something about their ancestors and also learn languages. Before Roots in the 1970s, if you learn any other language, you're being un-American. But then that switched. Do you have any recollection of that, or were you too busy
coming around with that? I don't think that was the view where I grew up. They actually offered Norwegian in my high school.
They did.
Mm-hmm.
And progressive.
I don't know. We didn't think we were very progressive, but it's just a fact. And they offered. This is only a town of 1,200 people, but it did have a good school system, and I think they offered German and French as well.
Those are the standard, but that's from the Red River Valley. That's probably the most Norwegian part of the Midwest, right?
I couldn't tell you about the rest of the Midwest, but yes, it's very Norwegian-Swedish, yeah.
Heavily Norwegian. Mm-hmm. So, and Christina, I have to say your English is pretty good. You must have started in kindergarten.
Yeah, so in Norway we start English. We start learning English from first grade. So I mean it's and all our TVs in English. It's just with subtitles. So it's everybody in Norway speaks English. Hmm. It's very common.
And do you speak other languages as well?
I speak a few. French and Italian from having lived there. And a little bit of Portuguese.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's pretty good. How about you, Bob? How many languages do you speak?
Kind of one. Kind of.
Well, I think you and I are in the same monolingual boat. We're a true American. And Amalia, how many do you speak?
Well, I grew up speaking English because it is a requirement in primary school in Guatemala. I was fortunate to attend private school. So besides English, which was required, you also had the option to take French. So I took French for a long time. I don't tell people that I speak it, but because it's so close to Spanish, mm-hmm. I can read it and I can understand it. But because I haven't practiced it for a long time, I don't really have the vocabulary that I have in English.
Right. But Spanish, was that your mother tongue?
Spanish is my native language. And I grew up in a multicultural country, just like the U.S. But it's also multi-ethnic, where there are some 23 indigenous Mayan languages spoken throughout. Mm-hmm. And so the Spanish in Guatemala has some undertones of Mayan languages mixed in with the language. Some of the words are close to the Mayan tongue and may start with a sh, or an X is also that sound, depending on how it's used. But, you know, believe it or not, I am don't speak any Mayan, but I am familiar with the Mayan language from exposure. You know, you go to the markets, you go to a school, and you may have a classmate who speaks one or two Mayan tongues besides Spanish. Hmm. And for them, Spanish is their second language.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, I've talked to people other than myself that they can detect when someone is speaking Spanish, which country they're from.
I can.
Mm-hmm. So, but American, well, let's use monolinguals like Bob and I. All the Spanish might sound the same. So, tell me some of the variety of people tend to just put you all into one puddle. You're a Latino.
Yes.
That's just the bucket.
You know, in my studies of culture and my mission, the mission of my business is to help companies develop a broader understanding and appreciation of Latin cultural nuances through healthy gourmet cuisine.
So the food is just an entree.
It is, yes. It's a platform to educate people. And my mission came specifically one time someone asked me, this is back in Kansas City, Amalia, where are you from? And I said, I am from Guatemala. And then they said, where is that in Mexico? And I go, oh my goodness, I have to do something about this someday. And that's how my mission was born. But within the nuances, not only is the nuances in culture and cuisine, but it's also the nuances in language. So someone from Mexico, someone from Guatemala, someone from Argentina, someone from Cuba, someone from elsewhere in Latin America and even Spain, we all have that mother tongue Spanish, root Spanish in our base. But if you are in Guatemala, we all have distinctive colloquialisms. We all have distinctive words that we use for a particular item or thing. So we also have distinctive accents. And that's how we can tell from who is from where by those nuances. So someone from Cuba speaks with a certain sound or with a certain accent, and someone from Guatemala speaks with a different accent. We are able to tell that. Why? Because we are used to listening to each other.
Like someone that listens to jazz can tell the difference between,
but,
you know,
but there might be,
and
yeah,
and all that stuff.
There might be times when we're talking about a particular item, and I'm thinking the word swimsuit, for example, may have a different, maybe a different word in my country and in other countries. Sometimes it might be a 5 or 6 Latin Americans in one room, and we're having a conversation. And at some point, we may ask each other, what is that? Specifically because of that, those nuances of language.
So few little gaps.
And then there's this sort of different slang, you know. So there are a lot of nuances in language besides just the accent.
Hmm. Well, in Norway, what misperceptions do people have of Norway? Do they have any? I assume they have some. I mean, thinking that Guatemala is part of Mexico is a bit of a faux pas.
Oh, gosh. what do people think about Norway? Well, you probably, what do you think of, Bob, of Norwegians and what we do in Norway?
I can only go to my own family.
Yeah.
And they're always right.
Yeah.
So there's a high degree of accuracy.
Oh, I don't know about accuracy, but they're always right.
High degree of stubbornness and ups. And
well, I suffer from it as well, you see. Well, of always being right. Huh. Yeah.
Well, one of the things I heard during the Olympics, I think Norway won. Did they win medals?
Yes, we did. Yeah, we had the most medals in the world. Mm-hmm. And we're a country of 5 million people.
Such a tiny. I mean, that's
because you did it correctly.
That's the population of Minnesota. But what I heard was, someone said, or one of the athletes said, "Well, we play for fun, and that's the true. Competition just gets piled onto that rather than the other way around."
Oh, that's good.
So yeah. So, what is your gold medal in?
Mine personally, or
yeah, I mean. Do you have a sport?
I do. Yeah, I play tennis and golf.
Okay, mm-hmm. So not a lot of gold medals in the summer sports, more the winter sports.
We're very much in winter sports in Norway, yeah. Many people say we were born with skis on our feet because we ski to school and...
Did you actually do that?
I did that as a kid, yeah. I skied on my cross-country skis to school. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Gosh, now that sounds quaint.
Yes.
I guess if I had to depict Norway not having been there, it's very beautiful, a lot of fjords.
Yeah.
And what do you have, oil money there, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we did find the oil in the late 1960s. But
so that helps out
that changed
budget.
That changed Norway.
And then my wife...
Oh, did it really?
Yes, it did.
I hadn't noticed.
And my wife is Japan, and Japan and Norway are the only two countries that still hunt whales, as far as I know. So what's whale meat like?
I've actually tasted some. Uh-huh. I was in Lofoten in northern Norway in 2014, and where we had some whale. And it's quite tasty.
Like a fermented whale?
Yeah.
Like a lutefisk version of
whale. Yep.
They have that in Iceland. You know, there's a Scandinavian heritage in Iceland.
Sure.
So there is a heritage of foods from... But this is old food from Denmark, mostly, because it used to be a colony of Denmark.
Right. Fermented on the way.
Fermented whale and fermented other things.
Well, I had whale in Japan, and it's kind of fatty, kind of a, you know, like pork belly or something like that. That's the way I would describe it.
Yeah.
But anything else? I think we've covered all there is about Norway.
Yeah.
I think you'd say fish belly.
Fish belly? That's right.
Yeah. No, it's in Norway. We're outside. We grow up going on walks and being in the mountains. I mean, it's just part of our nature and part of our culture. Hmm. It's every Saturday and Sunday you go on a hike and you bring one of these chocolate bars that kind of look like Kit Kats called Kvikk Lunsj. And I mean, in oranges, and you bring some water and you go out into the local trails and walk around. It's very common, and almost everybody does that in Norway.
Hmm. How are you adjusting to life in Minnesota?
Well, we don't have any mountains here, but it's a lot
trails,
of... Yeah, we have a lot of trails. We do have a lot of trails. And a lot of the land of 10,000 lakes, so we get the water here. Hmm. But.
And I should describe for our listening audience, you're blonde. What color are your eyes?
They're blue.
They're blue, okay. So... Kind of a stereotype here.
Yeah.
I was, one of my jobs, I was traveling around the state visiting schools, and we stopped at a school in Clearwater County, which is up in that greater Red River area. All the students were blonde with blue eyes. It's as if they were related.
That's where I was born, Clearwater County.
Clearwater County? Okay, so Clearbrook. We're getting home. So I know you're, did you used to be a blonde?
No. I was gray hair at... when I was six, and thanks for bringing it up.
Okay, everything goes back to the childhood, doesn't it?
I know, it's terrible.
So, did you have a sense then, growing up, of a strong Norwegian heritage, or was it normal, or did...
It was just, everybody in my family. I mean, and most of, all my grandparents all spoke both Swedish and Norwegian.
They did.
Mm-hmm. And my dad spoke Norwegian, and he was the only member or person of his generation that did. And that was only because the school that he went to was, he stayed with his grandmother because it was closer. to their farm. And the name of the school, I have to say, it's the most prettiest name of a school ever. It was called the Wide Awake School.
Really?
Yeah. Isn't that great?
Was that an accurate nomer?
I have no idea. But he was a good guy and bright, so it must have worked.
Wide Awake Students Only.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. We're talking here with Amalio Moreno Damgaard, Bob Hest, and Christina Helen Carlton from Norway House. Bob, how did you get into painting?
I always did.
In the garage?
Yeah, not in the garage. On the floor with typewriter paper and doing all that. My brother and I would draw. And I was the kid that did that. You know, oh, Bob draws. That's his deal. So
did you go to college at a certain point?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I did. And I studied at Morehead State University. It was a fabulous program there. Had a European academic approach to it. It was demanding, and you really didn't get a vote until you were probably a junior, and that was just fine. You realize when you become older that that was the way it should be. When you're a kid, you think you know everything, and you get older, you realize you didn't know a thing. But it had a very good program, and I owe everything to it.
And do you teach art at all?
No, I don't. I was going to teach art, and I went and student taught, and then realized that if I taught, I would never do art ever again. It would consume me. Teaching would.
Well, they have that adage, you know, if you can't do it, teach.
Well, I don't know. I agree with that, but
if you teach, you
can't. I don't think that was the case. I just thought I would just be a teacher. I wouldn't do this, so I didn't. I was a good teacher. I liked it, but I didn't think I should do it.
It's time-consuming. Also, you put on a different part of your brain to do that.
Yeah, sure do. Yeah.
Where we are hosting a wine and paint night at Norway House.
I'm looking forward to that.
That's where Bob is.
I am.
The group.
Yes, and we're gonna.
Self-portraits?
Yes, it's gonna be self-portraits, and I'm gonna be a tough taskmaster.
It's good to know.
While we're talking to you, Bob, I have one question. You were with an organization, a business that wrote music. Tell me about that.
My business partner and myself were in business for 25 years, and we had studios in Minneapolis and in Los Angeles, and we wrote music for all the ad agencies in the country and some in Europe. And then you can say, well, which is the one that you remember?
Yeah.
And it is probably the most obnoxious one that you do remember.
Okay.
And that would be Eric the Bike Man, which people tend to remember.
Okay. Yeah, and I don't know that one.
Just pretend you did. Oh, go along with the story.
Bike? You did that?
Yeah, remember that?
Oh. Well, I have a sense of, you know, because I'm a little bit both Swedish and Norwegian, so imagine all the talent that lies there latent. But I've imagined I could do a lot of things, but the thing that I feel so difficult that I couldn't do is write some music, because as soon as I get two notes, it reminds me of some other song, and I can't.
Well, that was the danger. Huh? That was always the danger, that as I would walk into the writer's rooms and say, that reminds me of the name of that song, and then they would say, no, it's not, and I would say, but it reminds me of it, so therefore it is. You have to change it. Because you don't want to get sued.
Yeah, that's
so you had to be very, very careful. And it's unintentional, because there's so many natural ways to write something that are all very similar. But you can't do that. So you must be careful.
And then you wrote them, they had to be what, 30 seconds, 60 seconds? What was your...
30 and 60, yeah. Some 15. And they all had to be very precise.
Boy, and you did it for 25 years. You must have enjoyed that.
I liked it a lot. It was really fun. You got to meet all these tremendous players. That was the best part, bringing in other musicians, the singers, and watching their talent, because they were just, I mean, Minneapolis is full of wonderful, wonderful musicians, singers. It's just terrific. So every day you'd be these just really brilliant people.
You were jamming out.
I would just sit in the corner and go like, who are these people?
But then they're done in a minute.
I know. And then you do another one.
Another one. Take two. Wow. So speaking of, I heard that cookbooks, you cannot copyright a recipe. Is that right, Amalia?
That's correct. But what you can do is make it your own.
So you add, a flourish, a little pimento here?
Well, for me, it has been more of an art form. Historically in Latin America, up till recently, there haven't been a lot of books written from a professional standpoint. The way books are written here in the U.S. and probably in Europe and elsewhere, they follow a certain pattern. A lot of the books that were published early on in my home country were published by home cooks, by anyone who is a good cook. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's wonderful because, you know, that is the way to preserve the recipes. But if you are not a cook, it's really difficult to follow that recipe. If you're a cook, all you need are the ingredients and to remember the flavors. And if you have tested that dish before, you have it in your tongue and you have it in your head. So the same recipe that may be, I'm going to pick paella, you know, came from Spain and it went all over Latin America, and now it's all over the world. But every country in Latin America has their own version of paella. You go to every household in my home country, and everyone has their own version of paella. So you have the ability to make a recipe in any way you want. And you are absolutely right. You cannot copyright recipes because, you know, they're just out there. And, you know, it's so easy to grab the ingredients and to either follow on the footsteps of who was your teacher as you were growing up, your mother or your grandmother, or if you do it professionally, you know, who did you learn the recipe from?
So a good idea for Bob would be to do a cookbook and then paint what the food looks like.
Yeah, and you know, the Minneapolis Institute of Arts has had Food in Bloom or some sort of an event every year where where there is a piece of art and then you create a piece of art attached to it, but certainly you can extend that to food.
Okay, well, so you're looking for any gigs mm-hmm. after this Norway House thing folds?
You know, somebody calls me up and wants me to do that, you know.
We should talk.
Yeah, there we go.
So, Christina, how did you get to know Bob and book him at your Norway House gallery?
Well, that's actually our director of gallery and exhibitions, Max Stevenson. And he's the one that actually brought Bob to Norway House. So you've known Max for several years.
And Max is a wonderful guy, and he just told me to not talk too much, and I would be fine.
What a wise man. We'll be right back with Synapse Think Tank of the Air, Max Stolman.
Synapse Think Tank of the Air. We'll be back in a moment.
And we're back. Synapse Think Tank of the Air. We're thinking left and right, doing more creating here than thinking. We have creating food, music, art, and
culture. No, and
culture. Well, what's your
arts,
your hobby,
business.
Christina? I mean, what do you do?
Oh, I've got two little children. I don't have a hobby right now. No, but it's work. And
they are your hobby.
That's my hobby. They are my hobby.
Well, then you get your second childhood, right? When you work with kids and you think younger, I believe.
Yes, absolutely.
Hesitation. Well, Bob, do you have kids?
I have a stepdaughter who's that I started being in the same house with her when she was in junior high.
Okay.
So, and she actually introduced her to her husband.
Really?
And they both work for me in the music business, and now they do that as well. They're in the music business.
Hmm. Well, that must be fun. I mean, you worked for the Wallets. Did you meet a lot of big stars? The instrumentalists that came in to record your commercials?
Well, I think, you know, I don't know about a lot of big stars, but there's so many people in this town that could play with anybody. I mean, with anybody, and a lot of them have when they were especially younger. When you want to go on the road, and when you don't want to go on the road anymore, you just say, "Oh, I got kids, I'm gonna stay home." Mm. But a lot of the guys that I know have worked with big guys and done all that. We did make one record though in New Orleans with a guy named Alan Toussaint, who was kind of a big guy. I guess he just died a year or so ago. And a wonderful human being and a wonderful songwriter and very good guy. So it was, we were lucky to have met him. And so we went and recorded in New Orleans, did a record with him. Hmm. But that was kind of the big guy moment, I guess. And it's that. Yeah. Hmm.
Well, but still so much fun to be in that creative atmosphere. So do you play music, Malia?
My dad was an OBGYN, and one of his hobbies was to play the accordion.
Mm.
So we were exposed to the accordion because of him, and both my brother and I had a kind of like a group together when we were children. And I want to say we were 5, 6, or 7 years old. My brother would play the guitar, and then I would sort of play the accordion.
You pretend to play.
We learned to play the accordion by ear. Mm. We were not trained by anyone. We never took any classes. Now, my brother did take some guitar lessons, but I remember there was a song called Yellow Bird, and I don't know if you know that song.
I know it like I know the commercial.
But it's an old song, okay. But it's instrumental. And I learned how to play that song so well that it would make my grandmother cry.
Really?
And she would say, play that song for us with your brother, and he would, he and I would, you know, do this for her, kind of like a mini concert.
Hmm.
So beyond that, I never pursued that. That wasn't my calling. That wasn't my passion.
You peaked out when you were like 10.
You know, probably I did, because that wasn't what really attracted me. I think that living with my grandmother for a long time, because my parents got divorced, was a blessing in disguise. The best thing that probably happened to me, or the best thing that I think had happened to me, because you don't know what you're going to become later on. In, you know, some people never know what they want to do in life. And she was such a good cook. I helped her all the time. It was a everyday routine that I was learning kitchen lessons for life. Mm. So when I was in banking, I cooked up a storm. I entertained regularly. And, you know, guess what? When I left banking, that was a natural thing for me.
The food.
My purpose, right? My purpose in life is food and culture.
Right. And also kind of passing on the lessons of how to become an entrepreneur. You started a nonprofit. You're a real Minnesotan. You started a nonprofit organization.
Mm-hmm.
One of the, I don't know, they say as many as we have lakes. Is it 10,000, 15,000?
10,000, yeah.
So it's We Men, and could you... Women Entrepreneurs Association?
Women Entrepreneurs of Minnesota is a 501c6 nonprofit that fosters women entrepreneurship in the Twin Cities through leadership education and mentoring. And our website is wemen.org, and it's kind of like a play on words women, right?
Sure.
And wemen, W-E-M-N.org. And right now, we are putting together a fall forum on October 25th that is going to be here at Cambria, right next door.
Where we record our program.
Yeah, and we have a powerful panel of speakers, which is going to be emceed by Leah McLean, TV news anchor from TV5.
One of the enemy channels, I guess.
Yeah. And we have a powerful keynote speaker, Dr. Arshel Georgiou, and then three other great panelists. And the theme is self-care, caring for your number one asset, you. So it's gratitude, worthiness. But in this day and age in which, you know, we are all, many of us are entrepreneurs, and I am running two businesses, my for-profit business, Amalia Latin Gourmet. I'm running this nonprofit business. We're going crazy, going from place to place, from meeting to meeting, from conference to conference, from event to event. And one thing that we tend to miss is self-care oftentimes. It's so important to take care of ourselves, not only physically, but also mentally. So looking beyond the body and soul, we're looking at lifestyle. We're looking at eating well. Why? Because if we can't function well, we cannot do our jobs well.
Hmm. Well, Christina, do you see yourself as an entrepreneur, even though you're running a nonprofit? Did you help found it, or were you involved in that?
Well, actually, my father was the one that...
So it's a family business.
Family business. Yeah, so when he came here, he was here for about 4 years, back in 2000. And he said, I see a beautiful Swedish institute on Park Avenue. Where's the Norwegian one? So that was the start of Norway House.
So founded by Sweden.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
Good. A little competitive.
A little competitive. There. Yeah. So it's so that's, and we're only, you know, about 2 minutes away from the Swedish Institute, called a little Nordic hub there, with also the Danish Institute, not too far away either.
Yeah. Great. So. Now, you heard Molly talking about the importance of balancing your life with your work. I mean,
I can resonate with that.
But you know, I didn't speak about balance. There is not such thing as balance.
Okay,
you know,
what word did you use?
Self-care.
Self-care.
Self-care, because there is not such thing as balance. There is not. So for me, the way it works is, you know, everything is intertwined. Personal life with business, you know, I work all the time, and thank goodness we have cell phones now that I can be in Timbuktu, I can be in Latin America, I can be in my bedroom, I can respond to emails, I can make phone calls, I can participate in Skype conferences and so on. So life balance does not exist.
But if you don't have balance, you fall over.
You know, I think that you learn to work in the midst of things. And that is one of the reasons, you know, one of the reasons why we created, why I founded Women Entrepreneurs of Minnesota, is because this goes back to 2007, before the movement that you see now.
Which movement? We have lots of...
Entrepreneurship, empowerment. Okay. That was just beginning in 2007, and I saw that starting to happen. But I also, what I saw is that when I started my own business, there was not support for women entrepreneurs. There was hardly any. Beyond Noble, there was nothing else. I think Women Venture was there, and so on.
I just heard of a story. A businesswoman I know has to move her location, and... she went to sign the lease, and the man said, could I have your husband also co-sign that? What is this? This is 2018.
Yeah, wow.
They needed her husband to sign. He has nothing to do with their business.
Well,
he's just a man, that's all.
Well, but this is also, I would look at it from a different angle. This is liability, right? It's shared liability. So if we're talking from a collateral standpoint, you know, it's not necessarily from a man's standpoint.
Co-collateral.
Yeah, but, you know, we are living in different times now. Now you add women's entrepreneurship, now to that you add the Me Too movement, you add so many other things that are happening in the country, right? And it's all good. And so that balance does not exist. We just learn to, you know, handle a lot of different things at the same time. And that's the nature of women, by the way.
So is that right, Christina?
Most women, we are mothers.
Yes.
You know, I'm a mother.
I can't answer that one.
You know,
certainly multitask. We learn how to multitask everything, but it's dangerous when we have everything at our fingertips with cell phones, and you know, you're never off.
There are more ways to be multiple.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So you're always on the, you always have it with you.
And you learn to take care of yourself. So you know, you learn to disconnect yourself from time to time when you need to. I do that all the time. When I've had enough, I disconnect myself.
You have to. Mm-hmm.
How do you disconnect yourself?
Turn everything off.
Yeah, just turn everything off. And
go outside on my deck and, you know, just listen to the birds and absorb the breeze and, you know, just read, you know.
Read.
Do something peaceful.
Well, Bob, do you multitask?
Men don't know how to multitask. Not really.
Well, that's what I tell my wife.
It's true.
Do more than one thing.
I'm really good at one thing. I can dig the ditch. Go dig the ditch.
Dig the ditch with total focus.
Absolutely. Best ditch ever.
You get in the zone.
True.
Hopefully the proper zone.
Well, you know, I do. I don't. No, I pretty much have to do one thing and then I'll do another thing, but I don't think I'm a very good multitasker.
Hmm. Well, I agree. In fact, I read an article that said that they said that same thing. Women can multitask, men can't. And if you have a gender change, then that ability switches too.
You're kidding me.
Wow.
I love that.
I read it.
Must be true. Must be true.
I'm pretty sure it's true. But yeah, if you become a woman, then you gain that talent. And if you become a man, you lose that talent.
You lose that
talent. So that's just one of the things separating us. Boy, I have to mention too, the women's movement, the Me Too movement. Boy, have you been listening to the hearings going on in Washington, D.C. about
interesting.
Kavanaugh and all that stuff?
It's powerful. It's really powerful. And it's for women to come out that strong in such a, what I consider deeply personal topic, it's got to be scary. These women are brave, and we need more women like that to do what they're doing.
Out. And it's been a wave the last year or so. We've been having a flood of these accusations. I don't know if you go back to Norway to keep tabs on what's going on there in current events, but is it part of the same sphere, the same fads?
Oh, absolutely. We have that too in Norway. We have several women's movements, and I think it's going on
worldwide.
All over the world, yeah.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. What do you think of it?
I think it's empowering. I think it's fantastic. Yeah, absolutely. Oh, it's wonderful.
And what's amazing is it happened so suddenly. I mean, you had kind of the shades pulled for decades and decades, or probably centuries and centuries, and all of a sudden, man, it's a different world now.
You know, I think it's been happening gradually, and, you know, 2007, I just picked that number because that's when I started Women Entrepreneurs of Minnesota. From then on, I think we started seeing, you know, a gradual, you know, more women in the workforce. But now there are some 49% of Latina women are in businesses.
What does that mean? 49%
of Latina women starting businesses in this country.
Really?
I mean, that's a
huge percent.
Yeah, that's a very big number. But you know, that's
so every other Latina woman in the country is starting a business.
But you know, and you know, when we're talking Latina women, you know, we're talking multi-generational, right? And we're talking just like they're immigrants. They're Latina women that identify as Latina women that are not necessarily born and raised in the United States, or they were not born in their countries of origin. So I think that there is a lot of interest in empowerment and I can do this too type attitude that, you know, we feel that the fields that were dedicated to men historically, you know, they still are, right? This is still a man's world, you know, don't get me wrong, because there are still a lot of things that we need to...
Well, if you look at the composition of Congress and all those things, it's pretty overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
Older white men.
We had a commercial in Norway, I think it was last year or so. There was an interviewer, a reporter, asking men... So when did you decide to become a career man? And they all paused. All these CEOs of different companies in Norway, and nobody ever asks a man, but they ask women. When did you decide to become a career woman?
Mm. Do you have any observations, Bob?
Yeah, I've thought about this. My mother went to a one-room school. And she had a much better education than did I. And I started thinking, why was it that my mother had a better education? And then I thought, okay, women were given the choice of two occupations other than being at home. And one was education, and the other was medicine. And I thought, they got the best teachers in the whole world, because all these women that wanted to be a teacher, of course, the best survive always. They had the best teachers of half the people that were born. It was so, that's why she had a great education. Now, it was kind of a backward compliment, I suppose, but nevertheless, that's why I think the schools were better.
That's an interesting point, because the all the top talent went into teaching or nursing.
Pretty much.
We had, like, the geniuses among women being those occupations.
Now, it's crazy.
Hey, let's be a banker. Let's start a business.
Yeah, I'm not saying it was a good thing. I'm just saying that's what happened.
So there's a lot more role as the roles expand that encourage women to enter. That's interesting. So it's
there it was. Why is mom smarter than me?
Good.
That's why.
Well, that's a good note. That was Bob Hest, and you can see his paintings right now at Norway House on 913 East Franklin Avenue.
That's right.
Just not too far from the river.
That's right.
So in the old Norwegian part of town.
Mm-hmm.
And thank you for being our guest, Bob, and also Christina Helen Carlton from Norway House, Executive Director, Head Honcho. What's Norwegian for Head Honcho?
Oh, gosh, Head Honcho. You're putting me on the spot here.
I think it's Head Honcho.
Head Honcho.
Head Honcho with an accent.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey. Anyway, we'll hold that thought. We'll come back to that on another we'll do another program just on that.
Yeah.
And then thank you, Amalia Moreno-Damgaard, for joining us here today on Synapse Think Tank of the Year.
Thank you for inviting me, Steve.
Thank you.
It was a pleasure.
And thanks to our producers here, Dan Colhane and Dan Cook. Thanks. We'll be back again next week.
Thank you for listening to Synapse. Think Tank of the Air. I'm Leo Espinosa.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ever Google a money question and end up 12 tabs deep with 12 different answers? This podcast is your shortcut back to clarity. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast breaks down financial decisions with a team of trusted journalists. They explain the why behind decisions like investing, home buying, and choosing credit cards with clear, research-backed insights. No jargon, no misinformation. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
From the trusted team behind 48 Hours, welcome to Case by Case, your weekly update on the biggest true crime stories unfolding right now.
Nick Reiner remains in custody without bail.
Luigi Mangione accused of stalking and gunning down United Healthcare CEO Brian Thompson.
From high-profile trials and stunning evidence to major breaks in cold cases, we'll follow it all case by case. Follow and listen to 48 Hours Case by Case wherever you get your podcasts.